You're listening to Radio Hangar Aviation Talk, powered by AI, fueled by passion. Hey everybody, welcome back to Traffic Pattern. I'm Pattern, and today we're going to tackle something that trips up almost every student pilot at some point. METARs, those cryptic little strings of letters and numbers that look like your cat walked across a keyboard. Now here's the thing. I'm not going to teach you how to decode a METAR today. You can memorize the format from any textbook. What I want to do is teach you how to read a METAR like a pilot, because there's a huge difference between knowing what the letters mean and knowing what they mean for your flight. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. Great gear for pilots and aviation lovers. Check them out. All right, let's set the scene. You're a student pilot. You've got your solo cross-country coming up. Your instructor told you to check the weather and make a go or no-go decision before you call them, so you pull up the Aviation Weather Center and you see this wall of text, and suddenly you feel like you need a secret decoder ring just to figure out if you can fly today. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The goal is never to decode every single character in a METAR. The goal is to pull out the pieces that actually affect your decision, and you do that by asking yourself a series of questions. Not about the METAR, about your flight. So let's walk through this together. I'm going to give you a realistic METAR, and we're going to read it the way a pilot reads it. Not left to right like a sentence, but by hunting for what matters. Let's say you pull up the weather for a Class Delta airport, and you see this. The observation time says it was taken at 1753 Zulu. It's reporting winds from 270 at 12 gusting to 22 knots. Visibility is 6 statute miles. There's a scattered layer at 3500 and a broken layer at 6500. Temperature is 22. Dew point is 18. Altimeter is 29992. Okay, pause right there. A lot of students would look at that and say, great, 6 miles visibility, clouds aren't on the ground, we're good to go, but a pilot looks deeper. Let's break this down by the questions that actually matter. Question 1. Can I legally fly this? If you're a private pilot or a student pilot operating under visual flight rules, you need at least 3 statute miles of visibility in controlled airspace, and you need to stay 500 feet below, 1,000 feet above, and 2,000 feet horizontally from clouds. We've got 6 miles of visibility, and the lowest layer is scattered at 3,500 feet above ground level. So legally, yes, VFR flight is possible. Check. But legal and smart are two different conversations. Question 2. What are the winds telling me? 270 at 12, gusting 22. That's a west wind. So right away I'm thinking about the runways. If this airport has a runway 927, I'm probably landing on runway 27. But here's the part students miss. Look at that gust spread. The sustained wind is 12 knots, but it's gusting to 22. That's a 10-knot gust spread. For a student pilot, that is significant. That means the wind is not steady. It's surging. One moment you've got 12 knots on the nose, the next moment you've got 22. That kind of variation messes with your airspeed on short final, and if you're not ready for it, you're going to have a rough landing. Or worse. Now, the airman certification standards for the private pilot check ride expect you to maintain approach speed plus half the gust factor. So in this case, you'd add 5 knots to your normal approach speed. But beyond the math, the real question is, have you practiced gusty crosswind landings with your instructor? If not, this might be a day to call your CFI and say, hey, I want to go up with you first. That's pilot thinking. That's what the examiner is looking for on your check ride. Not just that you can decode the wind, but that you understand what it means for you in that airplane on that day. Question 3. What's the temperature and dew point spread telling me?
Temperature 22. Dew point 18. That's a 4-degree spread. And this is where a lot of students just glance at the numbers and move on. But a 4-degree spread is a yellow flag. When the temperature and dew point are within about 3 degrees of each other, you're looking at conditions that are ripe for fog formation. We're not there yet, but we're close. Now ask yourself, is the temperature dropping or is the dew point rising? A single METAR won't tell you that. You need to look at the trend, pull up the last few observations. If that spread was 6 degrees an hour ago and now it's 4, you're trending toward fog. Especially if it's late afternoon heading into evening. That could mean the weather at your destination might be below VFR minimums by the time you get there. This is where students get caught. They check the weather once before departure and assume it'll stay that way. Weather moves, weather changes, especially when that temp dew point spread is tight. Question 4. What about that altimeter setting? 2, 9 or 9 or 2. That's slightly below standard, which is 2, 9 or 9 or 2. Well, actually, that is pretty close to standard, but let's say it was 2, 9 or 7, 2. A low altimeter setting means the air pressure is lower than standard. And the old memory aid is, when flying from high pressure to low pressure, your true altitude is lower than your indicated altitude. High to low, look out below. For your cross country, this matters if you're flying a route with terrain or obstacles. Your altimeter might say you're at 3,500 feet, but if the pressure is significantly lower than what you set, you could be closer to the ground than you think. Always get a current altimeter setting from EDIS or flight service before you fly. Question 5. And this is the big one. What is the METAR not telling me? A METAR is a snapshot. It's what the weather was at that airport at that specific moment in time. It doesn't tell you what's happening between airports. It doesn't tell you about the ridge of mountains 20 miles south where the winds are creating turbulence. It doesn't tell you about the rain shower sitting halfway along your route. That's why a METAR is just one piece of your weather briefing. You also need the terminal aerodrome forecast, the TAF, to see what the weather is expected to do over the next several hours. You need the area forecast discussion. You need to look at radar and satellite imagery. And ideally, you should be calling flight service or using one of the online briefing tools to get a standard briefing. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The METAR is the starting point, not the whole picture. Let me give you one more scenario to drive this home. You're planning a flight from a towered airport to an untowered airport about 60 nautical miles away. The METAR at your departure airport looks great. Clear skies, light winds, 10 miles visibility. So you think it's a beautiful day to fly, but you check the METAR at your destination and you see visibility 3 statute miles in mist. Ceiling is broken at 1,200. Now a student who's just decoding might say, well, 3 miles is VFR legal, right? In class golf airspace, you only need 1 mile for daytime VFR. Technically true, but think about what that actually means. 3 miles visibility in mist with a 1,200-foot ceiling. That's a gray, hazy day with low clouds. If you've never flown in those conditions before, it can be genuinely disorienting. The horizon gets washed out. It's hard to see the airport until you're close. And if that ceiling drops another couple hundred feet while you're en route, now you're dealing with a situation you didn't plan for. This is where the go or no-go decision lives. Not in the legal minimums, in your personal minimums. And if you haven't established personal minimums yet, talk to your instructor about it. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, actually recommends that all pilots, not just students, set personal weather minimums that are higher than the legal requirements, especially when you're building experience. As you gain hours and confidence, you can gradually lower those personal minimums. But starting out, give yourself extra margin. There's no trophy for flying in the worst weather you're legally allowed to fly in. So let me give you the practical takeaway here. The next time you look at a METAR, don't start by decoding it character by character. Start by asking yourself these 5 questions. Can I legally fly this? What are the winds doing to my plan? What's the temp dew point spread telling me about trends? Is the altimeter setting affecting my altitude planning? And what is this METAR not telling me? If you get in the habit of asking those questions, you'll go from decoding weather to understanding weather. And that's the difference between a student who passes a written test and a pilot who makes good decisions. One more thing. Practice reading METARs every day, even when you're not flying. Pull up the weather for your home airport over breakfast. Look at it. Think about what kind of flying day it would be. Over time, you'll develop an instinct for it. You'll glance at a METAR and immediately know whether it's a great day, a marginal day, or a stay-home day. That instinct is worth its weight in AVGIZA. All right, that's our time for today. A lot of the weather decision-making framework I talked about today comes from the FAA's Risk Management Resources and the Aeronautical Information Manual. And if you want to go deeper on weather theory, the FAA's Aviation Weather Handbook is genuinely one of the best free resources out there. Radio Hangar is AI-generated content built by real pilots who care about this stuff. You can find more episodes and all our training segments at radiohangar.com. Stay curious, stay humble. And check the weather one more time before you go fly. Radio Hangar, keep the blue side up.